Hey guys, it's Paul here. If you are listening to the podcast and you have received some kind of value from the conversations that we've been having with church and business leaders, could you do me a big favor? Take a second, rate and review this podcast on Apple Podcasts. Rating and review helps get the word out there to other pastors. It helps the algorithm push this podcast to other pastors and church leaders who might want to ditch their stress and fund their mission. I would really, really appreciate it if you guys would rate and review the podcast. I appreciate y'all. Now let's move on to this month's podcast episode. Hey everyone, welcome to episode 17 of the Mission Driven Budget Podcast, where our goal is to help church leaders just like you ditch financial stress, grow your organization's budget, and fund your mission one conversation at a time. I'm your host, Paul Rice, and on this month's episode, we have Pastor Sarah Taylor from Carbondale Assemblies of God. Pastor Sarah is the senior associate pastor there and actually spent 10 years as a foreign missionary in Europe. In this episode, we talked about how missions shaped her perspective about the local church, red flags to look for when deciding to support a new missions organization or an individual, and what spending on missions says about your church's priorities. Now, this is not a conversation I hear talked about in depth that often, so get out your notepads, take some notes, and please enjoy my conversation with Pastor Sarah Taylor. Pastor Sarah Taylor, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks. It's great to be here today and to be able to talk with you.
It's a pleasure to have you on. We got introduced through Whitney Barth, I think, that you are her cousin. Is that what you said?
Yes, that's correct.
So she thinks very, very highly of you. You were the first person that she gave me when I asked who might add value to a podcast like this after I interviewed her. So again, honored to have you on. Whitney thinks very highly of you. So I'm excited to talk with you about missions. And you were a missionary as well, I think for a decade or so is what we said whenever we first talked. Can you kind of just give us a high level, you know, introduction to yourself, maybe share a story from your time as a missionary, and then maybe let us know how you got into the current role that you're at Carbondale Assemblies of God.
Gotcha. So when I was thinking about some stories, I actually thought of one from me actually as a high school student and going on missions trips myself, which eventually sort of set me up for what I was doing. And so we had gone on a trip. And once we got there, it became very apparent that there really wasn't anything for us to do while we were there. And so each day it felt like we were making something up. We've got this team here and we'll need to figure out something to do with them because there's a lot of them. So we had figured out where they were going to stay and what we were going to eat, but we didn't exactly have ministry opportunities. And so in some ways, the trip was, it wasn't time wasted, but yeah, it definitely felt like there just wasn't enough for us to do. And years later, I ended up back in that country serving, and the people that were coordinating the trip became my dearest friends. And I'm just kind of part of their family at this stage. But in the years after that, we would talk about that trip. And yeah, that is exactly what was happening. There wasn't anything for us to do. That wasn't the week we needed to be there. That wasn't the opportunity that we really had. But it just, you know, there was these supporting churches in Oklahoma that wanted to take a team, wanted to go and help, wanted to be in this country. And so they let us come. But that really began to define something for me. Two things really of, okay, if we're going to take missions teams and missions trips into places, it really needs to be strategic. What are we actually going to do? Is this really just for the team itself, or is this for the people on the ground? And is there actually something we can do that would be of benefit? And so that really began to define what I did for 8 years with Europe Children and taking teams was, how can I make sure that the teams I take never look like that particular trip? But also it was that trip then that really defined for me what relationships can look like and how they can be built. And so relationships then that started with that country, with the people there, and with the families there are just, those have been the defining relationships of my life. So there was incredible things that clearly God was setting up through that particular trip. But the trip itself was probably not my best missions experience, but it really did. Everything was compared to that trip then. So for 8 years, then I coordinated short-term missions teams all across Europe to do kids work. And so we would find out when do you actually need us to come? What do you really need us to do? What would be most beneficial to you? Right. We're not just going to bring a team for the sake of it, but what can we actually do that will help? And so it really set the course for me,
right,
for those years.
And so now you are, you've moved out of that role in the last 10 years or so, and now you're at Carbondale Assembly. Yes. I apologize, I forget your exact, is it executive pastor or what exactly is your role title?
Well, I've always referred to it as the senior associate pastor. Executive pastors made me sound like I was an old, an old man who was a banker or something. And so, yeah, we went with senior associate pastor, but essentially, yes, everyone that has become kind of an executive pastor. And that's really kind of the role that I fill there, at the church. But as my home church, I had grown up there and had left and been gone doing missions work. I thought that that was where I would be staying, knew that there was kind of a sense in my own heart that a change was coming, but did not think the change was going to be leaving missions. I mm-hmm. thought it was just going to be a change in what I was doing within missions, and instead then had the opportunity to come back home, where actually my dad is the senior pastor and has been, it's almost 38 years that he's been the senior pastor. So, so he had been there and then invited me to come back home, which has been, an interesting challenge. That could be its own podcast on fathers and daughters working together in ministry, but it has been just the honor of a lifetime to be able to serve with him. So
what was that transition like for you as from maybe from a leadership perspective? We have church leaders listening to this podcast. So you're going from this missionary coordinator where you are not only, you know, a missionary yourself, but also coordinating entire teams of people. What was that change like for you? How was that translated for you into your current role?
Yeah. So it's interesting. A lot of times whenever, you know, missions agencies are looking for people with ministry experience, it used to be even within our denomination, within the Assemblies of God, you had to have had pastoral experience before they would let you go onto the field. And I went straight out of college.
Right.
And so all of my ministry experiences had been overseas and with missions. But I actually think that everyone should be in missions and then become a pastor. I think that it would work better the opposite direction. And that is because you learn something then about contextualizing things and learn something about what it means to understand culture and to really understand the culture within your church, whether that's understanding the community that you're in or just the church culture, because every church has one, and being able to understand that. And then really specifically for my role, because I had been a missionary serving in churches, we had been bringing in teams of predominantly college age and youth age students that would come in to work with children's ministry. But I'd also had then teams of women coming in to do women's ministry at a couple of those types of trips as well, working then with all ages, and being able to just make decisions on the fly, because you're only there for 10 days and you're trying to figure something out. Limited supplies, limited resources sometimes. So all of those things then began to prepare me essentially for the job that I had now, being able to make quick decisions, being able to work with people of all ages, because it doesn't matter what your title is. The church has every generation represented, or it should, and knowing how to work with each and every one of those ages, because I don't get to stand before the Lord and say, well, I didn't reach out to the children because I didn't really care for them, right? You know, like, so within our church, we still have to be able to minister to all of those ages and understand what's going on in those departments. So I think my role very specifically helped me, my role in missions helped me then to be able to work within a generational church. But I just think in general, being able to work in missions and spend a year or two, just fresh out of school or something, I think it's a great experience for anyone to have that is preparing to go into ministry, even if missions doesn't really seem like that call and you mm-hmm. feel called to work in the States and work in church ministry. Understanding though how to work with other people and understanding that the church is so much bigger than just one town, one place, one fellowship, even just one nation. I I just think all of that expands our understanding of kingdom, and truly helps us to be able to come back and to understand our own community and how we're going to be able to reach people in that way. So cross-cultural communications works even in your own local setting, as well as globally.
If I could get slightly personal for just a second. So you grew up in the church that you're in. Mm-hmm. You went off to missions, then you came back however long it was later. You were talking in just a second ago about how this missions experience has helps you understand the culture, how to cross-culture communicate, coordinate, do all those things. How did your view and understanding of the church that you grew up in change whenever you have had this missions experience and now you better understand how to, you know, understand the culture? How did your view of your church that you grew up in change whenever you got back?
I think partly it had to do with, you know, when you're growing up, everything just feels like, well, this is how we do church, right? Because these are the only experiences we've had, the only model that we've had, especially because for me, I, you know, lived in the same town, had lived, you know, on the church property for 18 years before I left for college. And so everything was shaped by that. Mm-hmm. So I really only knew my church and knew how we had always done things. And I think just getting that wider perspective on things began to help me to understand, okay, somehow I need to make sure then that what we're saying makes sense for everyone. And what I mean by that is not changing the word of God, which does not change. But sometimes I think I read the scripture and I think, oh, okay, so that's what that means, because that ministers to me very specifically. Yep. Or to the people I know in my church. But if everybody in my church looks just like me, then it's really easy to assume that that's what that passage meant then for everyone. But that's not necessarily accurate. And so if I read something and I think, oh, okay, so that's how that applies to my group of working class, middle class, white Americans, then that must also be how it would impact somebody on the other side of the world from a completely different ethnicity or socioeconomic background or experience. Or, okay, well, then I need to make sure that it's true for everyone. If God's word is true, then it's true, and it impacts everyone. And so I think that began to change in the way that I understood things about persecution or about suffering or about pain or about difficulties in those types of ways. And being able to then come back and say, okay, there's something that's so much larger here than just this. And if I read the scripture then, and all I can see is how it applies to my own community or America, and I don't see how it impacts the whole world, then I don't think that I'm exactly getting the missional aspect of the scripture, right? So it is the same thing throughout the Old Testament with the people of Israel. And then finally the prophet Isaiah says, listen, this is too small a thing just for Israel. Yeah. Your Israel is going to now become a light to the Gentiles and to all of the nations, right? So it's too small of a thing right here. And I think that's the same thing that happens sometimes in our churches. This is too small of a thing for just here. It's going to impact the whole world, because that's God's heart, is for the whole world. And so I think that begins to change our perspective when we've had those type of experiences, to say, yes, but we're reading this in too small of a way. Mm-hmm. How does it begin to impact other people? Yeah. And then even just in my own church, okay, this is too small to just think about who's already here, who's not here, and how can we begin to impact then our community, and not just think about what's our Sunday impact, but what's our Monday through Friday impact in our community? Because it's too small to just think, okay, we got to make sure that Sunday service looks great. How are we impacting that community? Because we need to be a light to everyone around us.
That's great. Curious about how it shaped your views on money and how it shaped your views on managing money as well. As a missionary, you get supported by churches or by individuals. But I was hearkening back, I think, a little bit in my head when you were talking about how it changed the way you viewed something that might be a little bit controversial in America, or people just don't want to touch it, pain, suffering, things like that. We like to be very comfortable, and we don't like to talk about that on Sundays, right? So I was curious in that sense, you know, surely your perception about money has changed as well. And I'm curious about how that also affected the way that you now manage money, and especially, you know, in your role there at Carbondale.
I think, it was always, you were always so aware that somebody had sacrificially given so that you could go as a missionary, right? And so that idea that someone has given, has made a commitment to give maybe what they didn't even have, not out of their abundance, but out of their little, in order for you to go and to serve the Lord, it made you want to do well and to be effective, and to use that money wisely. But I think also just understanding then how to be able to budget everything. That's another thing that I think is helpful for missionaries, or for people to be missionaries first before pastors. So for pastors, make sure you get those receipts in. Well, with missionaries, there's a lot more accountability, every single thing, not just your, you know, not just like the big ticket items, but everything needs to be accounted for. So kind of understanding how to truly be able to budget things and to work with, you know, a smaller amount of resources as well is a really helpful thing, kind of knowing where every penny goes. But I think seeing the generosity of people and seeing the generosity within the kingdom, I think that that has to begin to change you, that we can't hold on to things so tightly, but how can I just begin to give, and how can I begin to make sure that others, that others are receiving that as well. I remember years ago hearing a speaker. I was at a missions convention as a missionary, but one of the other speakers then was talking. He was challenging people to give and to make sure then that missions giving was sort of the largest percentage of their outflow of expenditures. I don't like to think of missions as yet another bill or something along those lines. But when you think about, okay, well, here's how much the electricity is, and here's how much I'm paying on, you know, utilities, here's how much the cable bill is, or the phone bill is, or any of those types of things. And to make sure then, is my missions giving then more than all of those things, or is it less than? Because that begins to tell me something about my priorities. So if a single expenditure, right, not collectively how much have you spent on your household, but just a single line expenditure, if you're spending more each month on cable than you are giving to missions or to the work of the Lord, that might say something about what's most important to us, because most people will just, you know, might give it an offering sometime, or if you personally know someone, you might give something each month to them. But that became such a big piece to me that, how do I make sure then that my priorities, even as a missionary, who else am I giving to? Because it's not enough. I can't just say, well, I don't need to give because I'm going. That's ridiculous. I still, as a Christian, need to be giving as well. And so that really became a way for me to kind of check my own priorities personally. And I think then that impacts in the way that we kind of look at church budget then as well. What's kind of those single line by line budget items that we can look at and think, okay, where is that lining up then with how much we're spending on missions and on the mission of the church? So I think all of that is kind of helpful in just thinking through, you know, just the actual amount versus just what's you know, kind of behind all of that.
Yeah. I never thought about that from the perspective of the missionary being generous in and of themselves. And I think that speaks a lot to the heart that you carry there into Carbondale and in terms of the heart for missions. And we're going to get into that a little bit later in the conversation. But before we go any further, since we've kind of navigated our way into the church budget side of things, and how much do we put towards missions? You know, how do we balance mission spending versus actually spending on what our local church and community might need? I just want to get really, really clear on the definition of what you mean by missions. I think everybody might carry in their own head a different, slightly different definition. Oh, well, missions for me is this, or missions for me is this. But since we're talking to you and getting your perspective, can you clearly define for us what do you mean by missions, and how is that different than, let's say, I don't know, local church support or local community support?
Right. So I think that there's two different things here. There's obviously the mission, right, of the church, and the mission then that's being set by the Father and is being commissioned then by Jesus and empowered by the Holy Spirit, right? So obviously Jesus is only doing what the Father said to do. Jesus sends us out then to make disciples. So there's a mission of the church. Yeah. But when I talk about missions, then I am talking about those that would leave one place to go to another. And so for me, missions really does have to do with where am I kind of sending someone to travel to go into a different culture. And obviously we see some of that then happening even within our own nation, just because of the diversity that is here. So you might have someone then that is from Oklahoma, but they're ministering to somebody from a completely different culture, but that lives in, I don't know, Texas, let's say. Right. So you might see that, but ultimately what I'm talking about though is what we have typically thought of as kind of world missions, foreign missions, that type of thing. Because I think if everything becomes missions, then nothing is in some sense. Then we can neglect that because, well, we're doing outreach within our church. We're doing evangelism within our church. Yes. And those things are outreach and evangelism. That's not the same as, and we need all of the above, right? So if we're going into our local school, is that missions or is that just what the church should be doing?
Yeah.
And that's on mission with the church, but that's not missions. And we need to be doing both of those things. So when I'm talking about missions, I definitely am talking about from your whatever your country is, where your church is, what are you doing then to send money to somewhere else?
Right.
And so that to me is what missions is versus then just being on mission with what the Lord has commissioned all of us to do. And that would be that evangelism outreach arm, helping, you know, benevolence, all those kinds of ministries then that should still be going on within the church. But for me, missions really has to do with where are we sending then that money and those people.
Okay. Yeah. That's an important distinction. That's why I wanted to define that up front. I just didn't want there to be any muddiness or confusion with people who are listening to this. And especially if we're talking about numbers and amounts and things like that, I just want to make sure that everybody's on the same page. So I want to throw a scenario out to you. So let's say that a church, a small church or a church plant just starting out, they're looking to begin actually supporting their first, and just again, I'm using your definitions here, their first missions organization or their first missionary on a regular basis. As a former missionary yourself, and especially as one who has been coordinating teams of people that are going into other countries, what are some things that they should be looking for to make sure that the money that they are has been given into that church is being stewarded well? What should they be looking for in those missionaries?
I think that if you're within your own if you're a part of a fellowship of churches, I guess that's what I'm trying to say. If there's already a network, to look then what's the missions agency within that, because those people then will have already vetted all of those individuals. If you're coming from a kind of a non-denominational thing, then that is going to be a harder task to be able to find those people. But there's lots of then standalone agencies, or even Wycliffe, for instance, Bible translators, right? That's a long held thing. And those are great people then that are doing great work. So I think there's a lot of excellent missions organizations then that you can begin to look to that are doing that kind of work, that are vetting those missionaries. But certainly if you're part of our larger cooperative of churches, then you're able to kind of look and see, okay, what is kind of our larger missions agency, who are they recommending and who are they putting out as missionaries? And that's really important to us. So within the Assemblies of God, that's a very large missions agency and missions organization. And so we know those people have been well vetted. Mm-hmm. And I think that is a really important thing. There's a lot of transparency in that. So for instance, with the Assemblies of God, you could call the missions department and say, hey, our church supports this person. Could you just let me know how they've been spending all that money? Well, they could let you know all of that. Every penny of that has been reported on. And I just think that kind of financial transparency is really, really important. And so I think making sure that the people you're presenting to your church, then, as these are missionaries, we're supporting people that you're having into your church, then, to talk about missions, knowing who they are, even if you don't know them personally before they've come, knowing that they are from this organization that is well respected, that you know, all of that is a really important thing. Because you don't want to just bring somebody in that, well, they said that, you know, God told them, who are they? You know,
right.
Who's sending the money and how are they spending it, and all of those things.
What would be some red flags for you? Obviously you have these organizations, which I think is a great method. What you've just described, let's say that maybe you have been curious about them. You asked the organization, provide this financial info, provide, you give us updates on what they've been up to, or even with a standalone individual. If we're going to steward the money that's been given to the church really, really well, I agree. Making sure that whoever we're supporting financially is thoroughly vetted is so important. What are some of those red flags that might stand out to you? Oh, we've been supporting them for so long, but what this has changed, or they're not producing these results anymore. What are some of those red flags that would stand out for you?
Honestly, one of the first red flags is, are they actually just a standalone person?
Okay.
Why are they a standalone person? Why are they not working with an organization, and why have they started their own? Now, I know some incredible people who have started their own nonprofits and work and workplaces. And so there are clearly exceptions to that. But I think that has to raise a red flag worth investigating to find out for sure why are you not still just working with another organization? And then who are you accountable to? Do you have a board? Who is on your board? How is that board made up? To know for sure that there is some sort of accountability, because missionaries tend to be self-starters, and they tend to be pioneer kind of people, which means that sometimes they can be rather quirky, right? They're willing to leave one place to live in another. Yeah. So they have this very, like, we don't need anybody. We can do this on our own kind of mentality, but then sometimes that can work, to their own detriment. That means that they weren't actually able to work in community or work with accountability. So I think even just that is kind of a red flag to be sure, that there's reasons for that, and that you've kind of checked all of those out. But then I think it's hard then to evaluate effectiveness for missionaries. I think it is one of the reasons why you go through a larger agency, just because they're kind of doing that within. And it is hard for a church. And two things on that. From a missionary's perspective, if you're trying to do the work of evangelism and do the work of a missionary, and maybe you're working in a Bible school, maybe you're planting a church, maybe you're, in some sort of hospital care, or working, you know, to feed the hungry, whatever it is that you're doing on the field. And let's say that you have, 55 churches, which is not even enough to put you on the field, but let's just say you have 50 churches, right? And that are supporting you, and all 50 of them want you to fill out a survey each year, to let them know what all you've been doing, and, and does it meet all of these categories? That's exhausting. It really is. And that's why, if you've already gone through an agency, contact that agency and find out, do you know what they're doing? Because you're creating extra work for that missionary that then you're trying to figure out, are they doing enough work? Well, half the work has just been for you. So that's kind of an interesting thing from that perspective. If all that you feel like that missionary is doing is just being on social media, connecting with you, then are they actually connecting with the people that are on the field? So that's kind of a difficult thing too. But then on the flip side of that, then, for a church to evaluate effective missionary strategies, it's interesting because a lot of churches want to hold missionaries more accountable than they'll hold themselves. So it's like, well, how many people have you led to the Lord on the field? How many have you led to the Lord in your church? Right. So, how many crusades, right? Which is a really old term, but how many, big events have you, well, how many have you held?
Yeah.
How many relationships have you set? Well, have you been in any of your local things? Have you met with anybody in your, so I think sometimes we're holding people to an account that we're not willing to be held to ourselves. Mm. And if we are doing all of those things, and we're asking that of our missionaries, but sometimes then we have to take into account too, those first couple of years with a missionary, they're still trying to learn the culture. They're still trying to learn the language. Yeah. They're still trying to figure out exactly what needs to be done. How do we partner with the national church? How do we ensure that that these things are happening? And some of those places, then you can't be super out front, right? So if you're talking about a place then where you're going to need to be under the radar, and you're asking that missionary, then what all have you done this year? And they're like, well, we had coffee with 12 people, right? And it looks like, well, how do I evaluate that with somebody else who was in a country where we set up a tent and we had 5 million people come through and get saved? You know? And you're like, where do I put my money?
Right.
Well, that you can't compare those two things. So I think that it's not just about looking at numbers, but it is looking then at, okay, how long have you been there and what are the things you're establishing and what are the connections and what are the partnerships? And just because that many people got saved, how many people have truly been discipled? How many people have been plugged in to the church? How many are still there? And then, yeah, what's coming then of those people then that are making those kinds of decisions and those kind of long-term connections, and how is it impacting their families and their own safety, and how are they being trained and discipled? So I think there's a lot of different ways. And then last thing that I'll say about this is not every incredible missionary who is super effective on the field is also a fantastic speaker and preacher in the pulpit. Not every person who comes into your church and preaches a dynamic mission sermon is extremely effective on the field. Those two things are not necessarily equal. And I think sometimes we assume that they are. If you're a dynamic speaker, well, that's great. But if your ministry on the field isn't to be a dynamic speaker in English, then how effective are you? Yeah, right. Yeah. So sometimes I think we look at that a little bit weird, and we want to give our money to the person that is like fantastic, and makes us, oh, wow, they did such a great job for us this morning, right? But actually, what is their effectiveness on the field? And so I think all of those things have to be taken into consideration.
Man, I could go so many directions with this. Boy, where do I want to go?
And I could talk for days about all of this.
I know you could. This is great. This is great. Boy, maybe let's go this way. What are some of the things that a missionary who was in the field and is, you know, back in the States for a brief period of time, is it called sabbatical, right?
It can be, yeah, it
furlough,
depends on what.
Or furlough, or
yeah, furlough, yeah, whatever the term is. Yeah, different places call it different things.
So they're making the rounds to all of their churches that are supporting them, and your church is supporting this particular missionary that's coming in, and they're going to speak at your church or whatever. What are some of the best things as a church to ask them? Hey, we would really like you to talk about this. And we're going to take up an offering, or we're going to ask more people to support you. How can churches, I'm trying to think of how to phrase this question the best way. What are things that churches should be asking missionaries to talk about, such as to make for the most impactful visit to your church, where you're going to take up an offering, or we're going to ask more people to support them?
So most missionaries have kind of their standard thing, you know, that they can do it in 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 15 minutes, full service, right?
Yeah.
You kind of just, you get your stuff. But the truth of the matter is each pastor knows what's going to best connect with their congregation. And I think that's important on the missionary's side to ask that pastor, is there something specific that you would like me to hit on? Right. So if you were coming to my church and you were asking me, I would be saying, tell some stories, right? Because people are going to be impacted by the individual, and tell those stories, help us to connect, give us here's what we're doing and here's how it impacted the one, right? Those are the kinds of things that I want to hear. But there may be other people then where you go into church and they're like, so you only impacted one person, right? we wanted the, you know, the big picture stories. So I think knowing then that pastor, knowing kind of their local setting, and then also finding out, okay, what's one specific thing that we can help with the offering? So, so a lot of missionaries and different places do it different things. So the Assemblies of God, and again, that's the one that I know best. That's where I pastor. That's been my missions experience. So we have to raise then all of our monthly support plus then project money. I know other organizations then where the organization itself kind of sends that money for monthly support, and they may only have to raise a portion of it or none of it, and it's more just projects. So I know different people do different things. But if you're coming into a church, typically what you're trying to do is to raise that kind of project money. Here's something that's happening. And it is hard to take up an offering for things like, we just need money to stay on the field. It's much easier to raise money than for, we need X number of dollars to do this very specific project. And that's a really helpful thing for an offering. And I think then asking those missionaries, can you give us one specific thing, and to not be afraid to name that amount.
Yeah.
There's sometimes people in the congregation that if they know that amount, their brain is like, I can do that amount. I can just write you a check right now. Right. Or other people that are like, oh, well, if he needs that much, then I bet my $10 will help to get to that. Yeah. You know, they're sitting there going, well, if everybody in this room gave, you know, $15, well, I'll go ahead and do it. So I think giving that kind of number is really helpful. But then there's also two things at play. If somebody's coming into your church, they're usually trying to raise cash dollars, again, for that specific project or need. But those missionaries also need that faithful support of the church then in order to stay there. And going back to your question a moment ago about red flags, one red flag that I would have, and this is funny for me saying it because I was traveling all the time, and so I wasn't based in one particular country, but if somebody is living in the States but is telling you that they're a missionary to this place over here, you're going to want to investigate that further. Why don't they actually live there? Are there reasons? Are there safety concerns? Are there, has their agency not asked them not to? Why exactly do they not live on the field and they're just traveling back and forth all of the time? There needs to be a good reason for that.
Yeah.
Are they working in multiple countries? And so it's easier to base, you need to know. And there are plenty of good reasons why that is. But again, you want to know. And there are missionaries then that have faithfully and has sacrificially have given their lives to move and to live among people, right? Incarnational ministry is a powerful thing. And it's the same thing as here. If you're pastoring a church and you live 3 hours away from your church, why? Why do you not live in the community that you're pastoring, right? Why would you not? So that's something to find out. But also then for churches to recognize that those missions dollars then that they give each month, not just when a missionary comes to your church and you give in that offering, but how can we partner with you to keep you in the place where God has called you? And those missions dollars, they're not fancy, they're not shiny, they're not, you know, they're not what anybody wants to get to give to, but that is what makes the difference, is keeping someone on the field so that they have the money then to pay for housing, and they have the money they need for their kids' schooling, and they have the money that they need to buy groceries and all of those things. That's really, really important. And again, that's not flashy. That's not what anybody wants to get up and say, our missions dollars this year. Yeah, but you do want to be able to say, we helped keep this number of missionaries in the place where God has called them. That's a big deal. And I know a lot of church plants and a lot of younger pastors are looking for those really shiny, exciting, you know, we dug 7,000 wells across, but also how many missionaries did we keep in the place where God has called them to go, in addition to 7,000 wells for clean water? You know, we need to be able to do both of those things, because that keeping missionaries where they need to be is really, really important. Most everything comes from relationship, consistency, and longevity. We need those missionaries. And I know that it's easy to try and pull money away from the missionary that's already been there 25 years. Let's help this new person. But that missionary that's been there 25 years, they probably have a really effective ministry. We have to keep those people there as well. So
you've brought up a great point here in just your last statement. How do you have the tough conversation with a missionary that you've been supporting for so long? And for whatever reason, giving has plummeted at your church, or you know, you're having to make changes, or the organization has changed and they're overhauling, you know, the way that they do missions. As a former missionary, what is the best way a church, hopefully at its last resort, can have a tough conversation? Hey, I'm so sorry, we're not able to support you anymore.
Right. And hopefully that is a last resort. I know in the pandemic first hit in, you know, March of 2020, and nobody knew what is happening, right? So we were all just a little bit confused. And it was that feeling of, if everybody is at home and nobody is getting a paycheck, and if businesses are closing, and if suddenly, you know, everybody's going to lose their job, right? So 10% of zero is zero. So we're thinking, okay, tithes dollars could plummet right now. And if that happens, then how do we, you know, make sure that our missionaries are still taken care of? And so one of the first things that we did from Carbondale was to send a letter to all of our, or an email to all of our missionaries saying, listen, your support is still coming. Please don't panic. Your support is still coming. Like, we have no intention of, you know, of stopping support. But I think those are hard conversations that have to happen sometimes. And sometimes it does happen because there are difficulties at the church. There's a financial shortfall. There are churches then that just begin to lose people. The church itself begins to decline. Sometimes those faithful givers are the older generation that slowly begins to pass away and head on to heaven, right? And so there are sometimes that there are those types of difficulties. And just being honest and upfront with those missionaries to say, listen, this is what's happening in our church. And, you know, we're being honest, here's where we're at. And so we're going to have to lessen that amount, or, you know, whatever, because those kinds of things happen. And it's also why it's extremely important then that those churches who are able continue to give that consistent support. Because if a missionary is only coming home once every 3, 4, 5 years, it's hard to raise those kinds of monthly support dollars on the field.
Yeah.
Your best chance of doing that is whenever you're home. And so you have to, if you need $7,000 a month, which that's really low for a family, but if you need that, and you're figuring I'm going to be gone 5 years, and you already know X number of churches are going to drop us for support while we're there, right? So really, I need to go ahead and get $7,500 or whatever, because you're trying to make sure that even if some people stop, or even if some churches close or have a financial shortfall or whatever, that you still kind of have enough. And so it's why, again, those dollars are so important that come in each month. But I think just being upfront and being able to say, instead of just stopping the support, like, maybe they won't notice. Right. So, we've had people do that where it's like, what has happened here? You know, like, where did that money go? And then you're in the awkward position of, do you contact them and say, did you forget? Did something happen? Did, you know, so just letting people know, here's what's going on. And then also having those conversations. And if the agency that a missionary is with doesn't have a clear retirement policy, then to find out, okay, what is the plan for that? Mm. And is there retirement dollars that are there? Because you want to be able to support retired missionaries as well for having given their lives. But at the same time, we need to get new missionaries on the field. And so how does that work? And do we need to continue that support? Or are you still going? Or how long do you plan to be there? We're trying to come up with a budget plan for the next 5 years, and just looking at your age, and are you planning to stay past that? Or so those are conversations that are worth having. And they're not easy conversations, but they're worthwhile. And I think that those missionaries are not going to be thrown off by those conversations. Yeah. They know how old they are too. So I think just being honest and asking, hey, can you help us to make plans for the future? We want to support you as long as you're planning to be there and to be active in ministry. What is your 5-year, 10-year plan? And, you know, I think some people might be reluctant, like, are they planning to cut me off today? Maybe I should just say, oh, you're planning to be here forever. But if you're able to say, listen, our plan is to support you the whole time that you're there, but kind of, you know, what is kind of that plan? I think those are important conversations to be able to have with your missionaries.
That's great. Didn't expect to go that direction, but I think that really took an interesting turn in the conversation, and I'm glad we went there and kind of hit the how do you start supporting a missionary, but then how do you have that ending conversation whether they're retiring or you just can't support them anymore. So that was wonderful. We've only got a few minutes left of our time, so I want to make it count. I'd like to actually rewind just a little bit. This will be sort of related to what we talked about earlier. I'd like to talk about all things being fair with a missionary or multiple missionaries that you're considering supporting. You got a pool of people and organizations. You've got to whittle it down. You know, you only have so much money that can go out the door at your church, specifically for foreign missions. All things being fair, the missionaries are doing what they're supposed to do. They're making an impact. How do you decide at Carbondale? Is it a reflection of, you know, the mission statement of the church, or is it a reflection of just what people in the church just kind of have a bent towards? All things being fair, how do you guys make that decision?
Well, for us specifically, it's been our commitment then that we would support every because so the Assemblies of God is broken up into districts. And so it's our desire then that we support every Oklahoma missionary within the Assemblies of God. So that has kind of made it easier for us. Yeah. So we just have a policy then that if they've been appointed through the Oklahoma district, then we automatically take them on for support as soon as we get word that they have become a missionary. And then we immediately send them a check, a cash gift, as well as taking them on for support. And then we kind of reserve our spots for having people come into church then that have already done their first term at least. Okay. So we kind of let our veteran missionaries kind of come back in. But I think for other people then that maybe it's not quite as clear cut, maybe just because of the fellowship or denomination or non-denomination that they are with. I think being able to kind of look and see, okay, where are the places then that we feel like God is moving or directing our hearts. And so I know some churches that have kind of sent all of their missions dollars into one nation. Mm. And I see that as an interesting strategy. And obviously it was important to that church. But for me, I think always kind of remembering that, that to me, somehow that becomes that it's too small a thing, right? Like God's heart is for the whole world and let's be a light to all the nations. And so I think sometimes looking at that as, where do we not already support a missionary? Is each one of the continents represented to begin with, yeah. right? So maybe we can only take on, 10 missionaries to begin with or something. Well, then do I have at least one missionary per continent? And then do I have, you know, maybe within that, then is there one from Northern Africa and, you know, whatever, how do I begin to kind of make sure then that the whole world is being reached through our efforts, that the sun never sets on the ministry of our particular church, right? Because we're sending people then around the world. So I think that becomes one of those things. And then just kind of praying and asking the Lord, okay, Lord, we have these options and you know how much money, and is this a step of faith to go ahead and take them all? Or is there one particular thing here? And is there a direction that you're trying to send us? Or is this ministry something that's going to connect best? And then I think, also though, I just completely forgot my other point, but I had a really good one. I'll see if I can think of what that other piece was, but I think looking at all of those things then, and just trying to decide, okay, how can we continue to support around the world? And I thought of what I was about to say, and that was that, the difficulty for some, and that a lot of times they'll say to missionaries, and a lot of other agencies have this idea to try and get personal support. So if we can get this number of families to support us, versus the number of churches, and if we let people, instead of our church collectively do that, you kind of need both of those things. But what happens is if the church is supporting missionary A, because person C in the church is funneling their money that way, if person C from the church leaves, then that church has just dropped them as well, right? So So now then nobody's supporting from the church. Or if person C then dies, right? So then what happens? So it is best if the church is somehow setting that agenda, and if the money is coming from the church rather than people kind of designating that way. If people want to continue to support a missionary themselves, but separate from the church so that you kind of know what's happening. I think that is kind of an important thing. And certainly there may be people in the church that, hey, this missionary, we know them personally. We have this connection with the church committee, board, staff, whoever it is that's making those decisions, consider them. But when you have just individuals then that are doing that, it does create this difficulty then for the church itself, because then the church has to say, oh, that person left. So you thought it was coming from the church, but really it was coming from person C. Now missionary A no longer has a supporting church. So I think all of those things just need to be clearly spelled out. And especially if you're a new church, how are we going to be able to run this and function this way? Yeah. So having people that are willing to commit to giving to the missions department of your church, and then making that. And then there are individuals then who will continue to give to missionaries on their own, but can also then give to the work of the church. So I think there's kind of two different opportunities there.
That's a great point. And you've highlighted a couple things that I'm big fans of. Number one being limited number of designated funds that people are giving into a church. I chatted with somebody else on the, I don't remember if they're actually on the podcast, but I did chat with this person, and their nonprofit got into some serious trouble because everybody was giving to all of these different designated, I'm going to give to this project, that project, that project. But all of their giving was so designated in this way, they couldn't pay the light bill, they couldn't pay the electricity bill. And so, you know, inside of a church, and you just highlighted the difficulty of and the danger of allowing people to support individual missionaries through the church rather than through their own personal finances. And so, especially if you're a small church or your church plant, you're just getting started and you're starting to support missionaries and missions organizations, I would highly recommend, and I'm sure you would too, Sarah, to not allow people to say, I want my money to go to, you know, John Doe over here and in some country that can, not only personally, but also for the church. It just makes it so hard to plan. And it's extra admin time on the back end too, is something that people who are donating that way might not think about. Well, now the finance administrator has to make sure that money is always going to that person. Well, what happens if the amount that comes in is different this month?
Right.
So it's just a real headache. But it also gives the advantage to the church to make sure that you have, and it's easier to plan when you actually just have a designated fund that people are giving into. So I would encourage churches who are doing that, stop and just put it all into a big bucket.
Yes, I agree. And that's not to say that individuals shouldn't support individual missionaries, right? But just you can do that on your own. And I do that. So, if it's a matter of tax credit, you can still get your tax credit directly to the missions organization. But I do that. So I give to my church and I pay, you know, I give in the offerings and those kinds of things at my church, but I also then support individual missionaries who are, you know, my dear friends. Obviously I have been at this for a long time. And so I send that money separately as well, rather than giving it through the church, so that the church isn't thinking, oh, well, Sarah is giving this money, so therefore we have this money. You know, they're just looking at, here's what's in the pot.
It makes it so hard. And we actually just took a designated fund off the table just in the last couple of months, just because we consolidated some things. And we said, you know, we're just going to make it even easier on ourselves. And so, I think too, I've heard the argument, and I'm curious if you've heard this too. I've heard people say, well, if I can't give to some very or somebody can't give to some very specific thing, you know, inside the church fund buckets, well, then they probably just won't give. I found that to kind of be in the minority. That we've probably run across a handful of folks that have taken that perspective, but generally I found that, you know, as long as you're able to spell out the mission and the vision of and where the church is headed, you know, missionaries or locally, people are more than willing to give into a collective fund. Is that something you've run into before? Is that
I'm trying to think if I've had any very specific examples of that, of people that I mean, I can think of examples where people wanted to designate, but I'm trying to think of examples where people said, well, then fine, I just won't give anything at all.
Right.
But I think too, that comes down to kind of a discipleship issue, in the sense that, you know, we have leaders and we have accountability and we have boards or, you know, however elders and are we trusting them to be able to discern then how to spend that money or not?
Yeah.
And we're trying to control something with our money. I think that we're probably a little out of line with scripture, and that becomes a whole nother conversation than just how do we want to get our missions dollars out? And I think that that's really a difficult thing. And so, yeah, if we're looking at that on how we're going to make sure, and you know, in some ways that was the problem in Acts 6, that they're waiting these tables. The apostles were, and suddenly it's like, something's not fair here, right? Well, some of that had to do with how are we spending the money and who's getting what food. And so we appointed then those elders and those leaders who are full of wisdom and full of the Holy Spirit. And I think if we're appointing leaders then that we believe are full of wisdom and full of the Holy Spirit, then they're going to know how to be able to handle that money. And again, there should always be great accountability when it comes to money, but trying to manage then, you know, well, I want to be in control of this, says that you don't think that your leadership is full of wisdom, full of the Holy Spirit, and being able to manage the church funds.
Yeah, that's good. We are almost out of time, and I always like to end on a question similar to this. I'd like to go back to your time as a missionary, and I think we maybe briefly touched on this already, but I was wondering if you could deep dive into maybe something specific that shaped you as a missionary that has carried over into how you lead, just in general, not even necessarily just in your role at Carbondale, but how are you leading people with what you learned as a missionary, both at Carbondale and outside Carbondale as well? What's carried over for you?
It's an interesting question. Yeah, I feel like, okay, try and think of something quickly.
Take your time.
I think one of the things is probably just about obedience. And that was one of the things that I would always tell the team, that when they come, just know that everything that you're doing is under the Lord. And so then if somebody asks you to set up all of these chairs and then 10 minutes later says, can you actually move them all to another room? It helps you to not get so frustrated, because you know that, listen, I just was a servant. I was just being obedient. I was just doing it as under the Lord. And I think that that becomes really the basis for everything that we do, is just obedience. And we're doing it as unto the Lord, and we just came to serve. And I think even regardless of what position that we're in, if we're, you know, a pastor at a church, if we're a lay person serving in the church, a volunteer, I'm just here to serve. That's all that it's been, right? So it doesn't matter if I'm the executive pastor or if I'm, you know, the 17-year-old kid on the missions trip that didn't seem to make any sense. I'm just here to serve, right? I'm just here to serve for whatever time that I'm here. And it was the same, you know, when the teams would leave at the end of the week, and sometimes they would have developed such close relationships with those kids. They would have seen them during the week. And, you know, it always becomes that question of what's going to happen, you know? Well, God only entrusted them to us for this week. And so now then we get to pray and we just get to release them back to the Lord. And sometimes that's happened in our church where, you know, people have left and we think, why are they leaving? And we have to realize, yeah, but we were just, we're here to serve, and they were only here for a short number of years or a short number of time. But now then we just pray and we entrust them back into the Lord's care, because he entrusted them to us for whatever season of time that we had them. And so I think some of those kinds of lessons of just, this is about service and this is about obedience, and we only get to shepherd the flock for 10 days or for 10 years or, you know, 10 months, whatever it is. But we just did it as unto the Lord, and we're ultimately trusting everyone back into the Lord's care. And however much then that we get to be a part of their journey, well, wasn't that amazing the way that God overlapped those things?
That's so good. Sarah, we are up against the clock. I thank you so much for coming on and exploring something that, A, we've not really explored on this podcast before, but B, exploring something that maybe doesn't always get thought of as deeply as it should in terms of how we support missions, how much do we support missions with, making those decisions. So, and even having those, like we went there, having those tough conversations when you have to have them. So thank you so, so much for coming on and sharing your expertise with us. You got such a unique perspective having been in the field. And then now as a pastor at a church, people might want to connect with you, ask questions, things like that. Are you on socials? Is it an email? What's the best way people can connect with you?
Yeah, email is probably the best way. So sarah@cagtulsa.com is the email address. CAG stands for Carbondale Assembly of God. And you can find out more about our church that way as well. cagtulsa.com is the website. And you can connect with me there too. But yeah, just my name, Sarah with an H. Yeah, if anybody had any questions, be happy to answer those.
That's great. And so, special ending question just for you, given your experience and background, is there a missions organization that you just particularly love supporting, you love what they're about, that you would encourage people to go take a look at?
Well, I suppose, yeah, again, as I mentioned, all of my experiences have been with the Assemblies of God. Those are the primary missionaries that I support. And you know, every church organization and, fellowship denomination has their issues and problems, but the transparency within the Assemblies of God missions organization, is just fantastic. I truly love and appreciate and value the Assemblies of God Missions Organization. They've got missionaries on every continent, and are just doing an incredible job to continue to reach our world. So so that's not a great answer, but that's the answer that I have.
Hey, that's great. And every missions organization is important, especially if they're being effective. And so I appreciate you sharing that. So Sarah, thank you so much for coming on. It's been great having you.
Thank you so much.
You know, I don't think I've ever talked with anybody at length about how churches should be engaging missions organizations. How do you make selections about who you're going to support? Things to look out for? How much should a church be spending on missions? How do you make that decision? I just thought this conversation was very practical, very helpful, and I think it helps a lot that Pastor Sarah was a missionary herself, and so I hope that you also appreciated that perspective from her as a missionary. My top takeaway was her heart for generosity. What she said during the conversation, that even as a missionary, she was looking for opportunities to be generous, and I just thought that how much more does that apply to somebody who is maybe not giving of their life in the mission field? How much more generous could we be stateside with our foreign missionaries that we're supporting, or with our local organizations that we're supporting? Generosity is so key. It is rampant throughout the Bible. Paul talks about it a lot in 2 Corinthians. And so I would encourage everybody, be as generous as you possibly can be. Strive to be able to be generous on every occasion. I hope you enjoyed our conversation today, and we'll see you next time.